Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, in our listening audience. This is Tamara Stark, and I have the great pleasure of being your interviewer and moderator for today's call with the fabulous Catherine Halpin. And Catherine comes to us with years of coaching experience and is a pioneer in the coaching field. So we are delighted to have her with us today as our guest. And in addition to being a pioneer in the field, Catherine, by way of being a CPA, is now coaching fantastic leaders and CEOs all around the country. She was a founder of the Arizona chapter of the International Coaching Federation, which is sponsoring today's call. She also served on the global board of the International Coaching Federation from 1998 to 2000. She is a well-known speaker, presenter, and author, and she has a great passion for transparency and for creating leaders all over the world. So she's been in practice for over 20 years. So welcome, Catherine. We're really glad to have you with us today.
Thank you, Tamara. It's a privilege to be here to be interviewed by you, and it's a delight. So thank you very much for being our moderator and interviewer.
Well, as I said, it's my pleasure. This is my premier interview, being the interviewee today, interviewer today, and you being the interviewee. So I would like to start, Catherine, with just asking you, in a coach-like way, as many of us do in our coaching sessions with clients, what are you celebrating today that you'd like to share with our audience?
Well, thanks, Tamara, for being such a great role model on walking our talk. I'm hoping over the next hour to share quite a few things about how I've tried to walk my talk as a coach, because I think that's, frankly, the key to our success as coaches because of the nature of our work. And so I really applaud you for thinking of starting this call that way. So one of the things I'd like to acknowledge myself for is three things. I'm just back from a two-week vacation in northern Arizona, and I so believe in the power of having real rejuvenation, not vacations where you take your iPod or your iPhone and your computer. And then I've had some opportunities over the last 8 or 10 months since my mother's 80th birthday to reconnect with a lot of family in new and different ways. And my baby brother was here visiting me a weekend ago. We had five just magical days together. So lots of good family stuff I want to acknowledge myself for. And then lastly, from a business perspective, I had an opportunity in April to become associated with Taylor Protocols in Seattle. And by going through their training, I learned so much about myself, and I learned that I have some real core, what they call core value energies around being a builder, being a leader, and being someone who can express their needs and get their needs met. And I saw that there was an opportunity in my business to bring more builder energy, and I've done that. And so over the last 90 days, I've had just a lot more success as a coach than I've had in the prior 16 years. And I've been darn successful. I've been really fortunate. So I have a lot to celebrate business-wise. I'm busy with the biggest clients that I've had in my 16-year history. And a great deal of that is because of my increased effectiveness, because of these new insights and awarenesses about myself, because of the Taylor Protocols.
Well, Catherine, just congratulations on all of that, and thanks for sharing with us and also reminding us that as coaches we are in a continuous growth and learning cycle to deepen our skills and expertise and also to build our businesses. And
right.
I know that's going to be one of our topics today with you because you are really a role model for us of a very successful businesswoman who is a coach. And before we start that, I'd like to remind anybody who's listening that our call-in number, if you have a question for Catherine, is 424-243-9638. Again, that's 424-243-9638. And we will be glad to take your call throughout this hour that we're together. So feel free to call with a burning question anytime that it interests you. Catherine, before we get started on how you built your business, tell us a little bit about who you are and where you grew up, and then after that, what really motivated you to become a coach?
Well, thanks for asking. I grew up in Vicksburg, Mississippi. That's on the river. And in a small town, about 35,000 people. And I was on a track to become a CPA because my dad was a CPA and because they didn't do any career counseling in the 1970s at the University of Southern Mississippi. So I got to be a junior in college, and I saw that there were no women professionals in Vicksburg. There were a few in the banking industry, but they had come up from being secretaries, and they had gotten to be like an assistant vice president. There were, I could count on one hand, the women professionals that had gone to college and gotten a college degree and were working in a job related to their college degree. There were a lot of stay-at-home moms who had college degrees, and there were a lot of working women that didn't have college degrees, but there were just a very few. And so a light bulb went off, and I said, This is not gonna work. And because I come from six generations of people in Mississippi who really couldn't hold on to their money or be all that successful because of that culture, I just knew I needed to get away. I knew if I was gonna have the kind of success that I wanted to have, I had to get away. So I was able to escape, and I got to Dallas, and then I went to work for an international accounting firm, and I started to work in environments that were some of the most toxic on the planet, based on the military, based on hiring lots of new people every year, lots of turnover, lots of people with it were abusive to the lower-level employees, certainly not collaborative or cooperative, very, very toxic. And I stayed in that profession for another 15 years, but the whole time I felt like I was an outlier. I didn't fit in, and I felt like there had to be a better way to do work. There had to be ways to create environments where people could be put in the roles that were in alignment with their strengths, and people could cooperate and collaborate, and the work product could be better. So I was searching for a new field to enter, and I found mediation in the early 1990s, and I thought I might be a mediator. And then in 1995, I heard about coaching, and a few months later, I found Thomas Leonard, the founder of Coach University and really one of the key pioneers in our field, and he registered me for his coach training program himself, and I took his program, his Coach U program, and so the rest is history, but I come from, I love my family. My mother and I are very close. I talked to her last night. I'm very close with all my siblings and my nieces and nephews. But those are, for me, the South was not a healthy culture. I could not be myself. So I'm pleased to report that today I've been in a 30-year relationship with my partner, Bonnie, and she helps me in my business by coaching me and doing quite a few of the administrative things. And so I have a very full life that I would not have been able to have in Mississippi, and quite a bit of success. Where would I have found coaching in Mississippi?
Well, hopefully it's there today. But so maybe we'll get a caller from Mississippi and find out. That would
right.
be great.
Right. Wouldn't that be great? If you're out there, please call in. I know there's great.
Right.
They're great. Mississippi's full of great people, but for me, it wasn't a good fit.
Well, and what I'm hearing is that you really have always been a pioneer and a builder.
Yes,
and
thanks
so
that
your history so fits and so is a reflection of who you are.
Thank you.
And
thank you.
So tell us a little bit, Catherine, because those of us who've had the privilege and the pleasure of knowing you know not only how generous you are with sharing what's worked for you, but also how much you want other coaches to succeed. So tell us a little bit about how you built your business in the beginning and then how it grew and changed over the years to become what it is now.
Okay. Well, At first, I coached micro-sized business owners, people with one or two employees, like a professional, like a stockbroker with an administrative assistant or a CPA with an administrative assistant or a bookkeeper. And I got those clients through public speaking. I had no criteria, no standards. I would speak wherever they would let me come, and I would speak at the same day. I would speak at 7 o'clock in the morning at the Tempe Chamber of Commerce, their Donuts and Dialogue series. And then at 7 o'clock that night, I would be speaking at the Glendale Public Library Small Business Series. No criteria. I went everywhere, you know, civic clubs, any place that would let me come to speak. And I would offer everybody in the room at the end of my little presentation, well, if they gave me 45 minutes, I would take 15 minutes of content, and then I would try to engage the audience by giving them a little assessment test that I had developed based on the theme. And I spoke on topics called The Secrets of Extreme Profitability, that was a Coach You thing, or The Secrets of Success Without Struggle. And I would give people a little test to kind of measure their extreme profitability or lack thereof, or their success without struggle, or their lack thereof. And that would get them, you know, that'd be like a little wake-up call for them. Mm-hmm. They would see, oh, my gosh, there's so much opportunity here for me. And so then I would try to very casually engage them. Like, I just thought of it. Like, hey, does anybody want to share? Anybody be willing to share what they saw to take in our little test here? And then from that, I would ask permission to coach, and I would start coaching. And after that first volunteer, it would be like Me, Mr. Cotter, if you remember that show from the 70s.
Right.
Everybody would want to get coaching. And at the end of that 45 minutes or hour, however much time I had, I would offer everybody in the room, if there are two people or 25 people, I would offer everybody in the room an opportunity to take advantage of a complimentary, no-obligation demonstration coaching call. And I would say, if you want to take advantage of that, you just have to give me your business card. And I would not be able to get all of those people to, you know, call me back or to show up at the right time for the coaching call. But about 25% of them would eventually do that coaching call with me, 30-minute complimentary session, and in that 30 minutes, I was able to close them. And then at the very first – oh, go ahead.
No, I'm saying that's fabulous.
I would coach my brains out. And then in the very first coaching conference, it wasn't even called the International Coach Federation then, in 1996 in Houston, I met a guy named Dan McNeil, and Dan was coaching in the Fortune 1000, and he was coaching random vice presidents, and he said, why don't you come with me and be an independent contractor? And he got me my first introduction into the Fortune 1000. I got a client that he had not been able to connect with, and I coached her, and she got promoted quickly. And then all of her girlfriends with this Fortune 500-sized company called her to congratulate her, and she said, as women often do, she didn't give herself credit. She said, it wasn't me. It was my coach, Catherine. You should talk to Catherine. So I went from 35 small business clients to 25 random vice presidents in Fortune 500 companies, mostly with this one company, but they referred me into their husband's companies or their girlfriend's husband's, you know, whatever. So I got into a big international accounting firm. I got into quite a few high-tech companies. But I was coaching at the random vice president level. And I had three small business clients in the late 1990s at the same time. With one had 12 employees, one had 35 employees, and one had 80 employees. And I saw the power of coaching at the very top.
Mm-hmm.
When you coach a random vice president, no matter how strategic and grounded and centered and focused they are, they still have to contend with the people above them who might not be focused and might not be strategic, especially in those publicly held company environments where they're always chasing next quarter's earnings expectations. So I made the decision in 2001 to go into smaller companies and only penetrate in a company where I could penetrate with the CEO first and foremost. And I've been fortunate to do that, and I'm in companies now, Fortune 1000-sized companies, you know, maybe 1,000 to 1,500 employees with, you know, maybe a billion to 5 billion in revenue. That's mm-hmm. kind of my sweet spot. because I'm, you know, come from a big company background, and so I'm comfortable with the complexity and the, you know, chaos and confusion, frankly. So,
remember once, Catherine, in a presentation you made to our Phoenix chapter of the International Coaching Federation, you called yourself a thinking partner as opposed to a coach for CEOs.
Yeah.
Can you tell
yes.
a little bit more about that?
Well, a couple of things about that. First of all, CEOs don't really want to have a coach. They've been referred to me for some reason. Either their board of directors says, you know, this is your first time, you should be a CEO, and so why don't you get a coach to help you assimilate and build your team out. Or CEOs have been new and they've known that they needed that when they're going from being a COO to being a CEO. Or their CFO perhaps might have introduced me to them. So they don't really love the idea that they're being coached, but they do treasure, and I mean treasure, the connections I have with these people are extraordinary, and they treasure their time with me, and they see me as a thinking partner, somebody that they can let down their hair with, and they can think out loud, and they can be just as creative and innovative as they want, and they can trust, you know, of course, it's all going to be confidential. And I have a very affirming style, and they love that. And so I tend to keep those clients a very long time, and it's because they want somebody to not just think things through with, but they want somebody to help them celebrate their own successes. And I help them do that. So I tend to keep my clients a very long time, sometimes until they retire. So the thinking partner, I think, is strategic thinking partner is what they value the most. And, you know, my philosophy of coaching, I think, is like many coaches. I don't think I, you know, I'm not a consultant. I'm not trying to give them the three easy steps. I'm very opinionated, and I'm always sharing my opinion. And I think when you're coaching at the CEO level, they want that opinion. They appreciate your perspective. But my philosophy is that they have the solutions with, you know, within themselves. I just simply need to act as a facilitator to help them bring forth those solutions to their awareness and to get them into a way that they can articulate it to their team and to their colleagues, and then they can execute on that. So that's kind of the role I play, rather than more of a traditional coach that's really just simply asking questions. I do share my perspective quite a bit.
And you're saying that they value that when they're working with you?
Yes, because if there's, with the CEO level, you know, so many people are just telling them what they want to hear, so they really appreciate somebody that will go head-to-head with them and say, well, I don't think that's the only perspective. I would never say I think that's a bad perspective. I would, I would rarely say I think that's a limited perspective. I would say that's fascinating. That's a fascinating perspective, and you might want to think about broadening your perspective on that. And like, for instance, here's my perspective, and then another possible perspective you might have. So that's what I mean by that affirming style. I'm never going to judge them. I'm never going to make them wrong. I'm never going to I think people, it's human nature to beat ourselves up, and so I don't think anybody needs their coach to help beat them up. So I have very soft style, very affirming. They can tell me they did the most whacked out thing, and I'll say, well, that was one approach. Let's put our heads together. Let's put our heads together and think of other approaches that you might use next time.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you have a particular niche in terms of a sector of the business community with whom you work?
Well, I've worked everywhere. I've worked in lots of professional services firms like architects, engineers, accountants, and even a few law firms. I've worked in high tech, telecommunications. You name it, I've worked there. But over the last few years, I've tried to really be smarter about how I run my own business and develop a niche. And I had a niche, I just didn't own it. But so my niche today is healthcare. I work in health insurance companies. I work in hospitals. I work in companies that support insurance companies or hospitals. I work in institutes like research, medical research institutes. So my niche is healthcare.
Would you recommend to people that are building a coaching business that they consider having a niche in order to be successful, or is that not important in your view?
No, I think it's critically important. For years and years, I've been coaching a guy named Dan Kennedy that I heard about 15 years ago through the National Speakers Association, and Dan says, niches equal riches.
Mm-hmm.
And so I definitely think that. So I'm 16 years into a coaching business, but I'm just now, in the last year or two, developing my own niche or owning my own niche. So I think if you were just starting out, I know a guy in the NSA. Now, he's more of a trainer and a consultant, not a coach, but he spoke to us last year or the year before. He's making $1 million a year, and he's got a very minute niche. His niche is jewelry stores, and he goes in and he works with the manager of a jewelry store in a mall to help them, you know, have more productivity and more sales from their people. That's his niche. So he's not doing the jewelry manufacturers. He's not doing the jewelry middlemen that are getting the jewelry from the manufacturer to the mall. He's just working with those guys at the mall that are own a chain or one. They're managing one branch of a chain, or it's a mom and pop jewelry store. That's his niche. So that's a good example of a very small niche, but how you can make $1 million a year in a small niche. Because then you own
what guidance? What guidance would you have for our listeners? And by the way, before I ask you this question, let me remind people of the call-in number, which is 424-243-9638, and you're welcome to call in at any time, and we'd be glad to hear your question. So, Catherine, what advice or guidance would you have for people about how to go about picking your niche?
Well, for me, the healthcare, I'm a kind of an accidental expert on lots of things, and I'm an accidental expert in healthcare. I fell into it, but I am quite passionate about health and well-being. Coach U had a fundamental training program they call their Personal Foundation Program, and that was fundamental for me. It was life-altering, about building in reserves of time, building in a program of extreme self-care, building in time for real rejuvenation, getting rid of things that you're tolerating and putting up with, getting complete with things that you're incomplete with, like people or situations. So that was such a key piece of my own personal transformation from a crazy maker, workaholic CPA to being a successful coach. So I've just fallen into that personal foundation coaching. I do an awful lot of that with my clients. And my belief about healthcare and healthcare reform is that we have to get people healthier. We can't just keep doing what we're doing. It's not a sustainable model, financially or otherwise, with the obesity and the diabetes and the high rate of cancer. So I'm quite passionate about getting people healthier, both mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually. So healthcare for me is a good niche. So I would definitely recommend that new coaches or young coaches or coaches that have been coached a long time but never developed a niche, look at your clients right now and try to, you know, go through some exercises to see which ones are your most profitable, which ones are your most productive, which ones do you get the most energy from. Martha Beck says, you know, our life is sort of like a kid's game of tag. You know, if you're hot, if something's hot, then go toward it. If it's cold, go away from it. So if it gives you energy, go towards it. And if it doesn't give you energy, then move away from those kinds of clients.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and just, so you're saying that it's allowed you to really manifest your passion, make money, be successful, and create results. And I'd like to focus for a minute, Catherine, on results, because it's something that I believe as a coach is important, and I've heard you talk, too, about how you really work with people to support them in getting incredible results that they've never achieved before. So can you share a little bit about your experience?
Sure. Well, a key piece has been the Personal Foundation Program. From the very first introductory call, I'll ask people, tell me, what do you do to take care of yourself? and I'll try to coach them to take whatever they're doing now to the next level. And reserves of time was a big piece of the Personal Foundation program, and I actually took that and developed 8 different kinds of reserves of time I try to coach my clients to put in place, like getting places early, having time to do a brain dump, get stuff out of your head, have time to think, have time to prepare to negotiate expectations with your colleagues, have time to problem solve. So the Personal Foundation has been a key. The other key to my success has been my commitment to help people take personal responsibility for what's not working. I'll ask them this question when they always inevitably have somebody named Bob on their team, and they'll pretty much think Bob is an idiot, he just doesn't get it, and I'll let them rant and rave about Bob for about 30 seconds, and then I'll talk over them if I have to, and I'll say, well, I'm just wondering, I'm just curious, who is it that you're being that has given Bob permission to not perform and to not meet your expectations? And the longtime clients will say, oh, Catherine, I hate when you ask me that question. And the new clients will not know what that means, and so I'll have to give them some context. But I'll say what I mean by that is, who are you being, you know, have you articulated your expectations? Have you communicated those expectations in a way that would help Bob really understand what you wanted? Have you given Bob the support structures, like interim checkpoints? Have you given him the resources and the tools and the training that he needs to be successful? Have you met with Bob lately? So often people are complaining about people and they're not even meeting with them. So it's not rocket science what I do, but I help them build on what is working. I help them take better care of themselves so their perspective is more balanced. They're not in maniac mode. They're not frantic or frenetic. And I help them take personal responsibility. And my CEO clients will say to me, they'll have some breakthrough with Bob, and they'll say, gosh, I cannot believe now Bob stepped up. He's so much smarter. He's so much more engaged. He's delivering all these extraordinary things. It's just unbelievable. And I'll say to them, well, how were you able to create that? And they'll say, it was simple, Catherine. I wanted to control my own destiny. You've taught me that as long as I'm complaining about Bob, then Bob is controlling my destiny. If I want to take personal responsibility and get back in conversation with Bob and re-engage Bob, then I'll get to control my destiny, and I won't be at the mercy. I won't be a victim of these circumstances, the economy or Bob or whatever. So that's really, it's not rocket science, but those 3 things have been a huge piece of why I've been so successful. Like, I'm in the quantum leap business, and the clients will say, this is really unbelievable. This is, we've created something here. We've gotten a result that I, you know, a week ago or a year ago would not have thought was even possible. But it's from doing those 3 things, taking better care of themselves, getting some exercise, getting those endorphins released in their brain so they have more mental clarity and they can better articulate, and then giving themselves that time to articulate to themselves and then to their colleagues. And then when things are not working, taking that personal responsibility.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And this is something that you've learned as a coach over time that's really working.
Yes. I it was a combination of lots of places. I can't even tell you where I learned it all, but that way of being, that's called ontological coaching, and the Newfield Network and a variety of other coach training schools train you in that. And at the very first coach conference, I met Dan McNeil, like I mentioned, and he was trained in that, and so he trained me in that coaching. So it's just been a kind of a conglomeration of, experimenting with what works and what doesn't work. And in the beginning, I attracted a lot of clients. I think we all attract the clients that we're ready to receive. And I attracted a lot of clients that were in maniac mode because I had spent 25 years in maniac mode. And so I said to them, I don't know if this will be helpful, but let me tell you what I've done that's helpful. And it was the consistent exercise and consistent reserves of time. And then what I saw from my coaching in those early years was that the people that did those two things consistently graduated from the coaching program more quickly than the people who blew off those two things. And so when people weren't willing to do those two things, I would fire them from the coaching business. I would say, you know what? Looks like you got a good plan. I wish you the best luck with that plan. Because I didn't want, you know, that was an energy drain for me if they were always going to be a victim.
Mm-hmm.
So I was able to, I think one of my gifts is being able to see patterns and trends even in my own business. At least that was one example where I was able to see a pattern or a trend in my own business. Mostly I'm better at it, seeing the patterns and the trends in the clients' businesses. But I saw that pattern and that trend that people that did like I did, the whatever exercise they wanted to do, didn't matter to me, but something where they started sweating, you know, going for a walk with your dog, you know, at a fairly good pace, or hiking or biking or going to the gym, or taking an aerobics class. It didn't matter to me what they did, but they had to do something. And then those reserves of time. And then when they started to get the quantum leap results or the successes, I would always make them stop and celebrate that success. One, because I think it's a basic human need that we all have to feel valued and appreciated, and it's something we certainly don't do for ourselves nearly enough. But most importantly, that helped me help them articulate what the factors were in their success so that they could replicate those. And it was always about taking better care of themselves, taking personal responsibility, and coming up with some kind of process that they would follow.
So it sounds to me as if over the years you've also been much clearer about with whom you're the most successful in terms of coaching.
Yes, 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 yes. I no longer do the complimentary no obligation demonstration coaching calls that I did in the beginning, but I always want to have a complimentary confidential conversation with the person because I want to see if they're eligible to come into my coaching practice.
Uh-huh. So you are at the point in your practice where you're very clear about who you're really going to work well with and who you're not going to work well with.
Yes, yes. And I mean, it's not always that easy to see in the first conversation, but I'm pretty good at, you know, picking out people. And then I'm pretty good at handing off people to other coaches, I think.
So you are, it sounds like you're also very good at trusting your knowing. And being willing to be honest about saying yes or no to a client and helping them find somebody that they can work with.
Right, 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 right. Yeah. I wouldn't say in all areas of my life and my business I'm good at trusting my knowing, but in that instance I'm pretty darn good. Yes.
And that's definitely a skill.
Well, thanks.
You know, and I think that's also one of the reasons that you're a pioneer and a role model for a lot of us because you've been willing to share your experiences and how you've learned that for yourself.
Yeah, thanks.
So what's been an example of just tremendous success that you felt as a coach in working with the client?
Well, that very first corporate client that I got that Dan McNeil referred me to, she wanted to leave her company, her Fortune 500 company, after 28 years of service. She was going to walk away within a year or two of getting her six-figure pension and lifetime health benefits. And so me being the CPA that I am and being quite, you know, cheap, I was like, that's not going to work for me. You know, I said that to myself. And so I said to her, well, let's just see if we can come up with some kind of solution here so you don't have to leave your company. Well,
are you there?
Yes.
Hello?
Can you hear me? Hello?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I'm not certain what's happening. Okay. Keep talking and hopefully this will work itself out, whatever it is.
Okay. I don't hear any noise, so I think we're good.
I think we're good, yes.
So she was able to take personal responsibility for the situations that were causing her to be so frustrated that she wanted to leave. There were several people above her and people her peers, and with each one of those people, she took responsibility and recreated the relationship, whether it was a boss or a former boss or a peer, and as a result of that, she got promoted. And that's how I went from, you know, one corporate client to 25 corporate clients over about an 18-month period, because everybody was so excited about her promotion. So that was a big success. And then today, you know, the clients I get are huge clients, and I get to work with the CEO and their leadership team. So I might be coaching 8 or 10 people in the same company. And I feel very fortunate to do that, because it's so powerful, because you hear about the challenges from 8 or 10 different perspectives. And it's also very affirming to me as a coach that I'm able to keep all that, everything confidential, and keep everybody feeling safe with me. Because it's very complicated when you're in complex, when you're coaching a lot of people in the same organization. It's a really great model, and I think it's the best model, and it's the only model I'd be interested in participating in at this stage of my growth and development. But it's a complicated model, and I have a lot of satisfaction from that.
Can you share more with us about, when you talk about confidentiality and coaching, what that looks like, particularly in an environment where you're coaching many people in the same firm?
Well, what I used to do as a CPA was to be kind of a gossip. I would get triggered by somebody, and then I would go cubicle to cubicle or office to office looking for allies that would agree with me that that guy was, in fact, an idiot. So I know how destructive not having a good connection with people can be. So my primary focus in all of my work is having all the clients feel even better about each other. Mm-hmm. So I tell them I'm going to keep everything in a confidential manner, but I ask your permission up front to take what you share with me and use that information to ask your colleagues better questions. And I'm not going to report back to the CEO. I'm not going to report back to the HR people. But what I do is I try to find ways. So like they'll bring up an issue, and I know that I talked to Bob earlier this week, and he had that same issue about that same situation at work. And so I'll say, they'll bring up an issue and they'll be frazzled about it, and I'll say, hey, now have you talked to anybody at all about that? And they'll say no, and I'll say, well, is there anybody that might have a similar concern or be involved at the same level? And they'll say, well, yeah, Bob, I think. And I'll say, well, when was the last time you talked to Bob? And would you be willing to go to lunch with Bob? Would you be willing to reach out to Bob and talk about this so you can coach each other? And then I might say to them, you know, before you go down that path, help me understand where Bob adds value in your company. So that gets them in a really good frame of mind. So then when they walk down the hall to invite Bob to lunch, they're thinking great thoughts about Bob. They're excited about Bob. They're energized by the opportunity to connect with Bob. And so they walk in there, and then Bob feels that. And he responds accordingly. And so now we're there spiraling upward together, instead of doing what I used to do in an organization, which was to spiral downward together. I would spiral downward and bring all these people with me.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that can create a really toxic work environment.
Oh, yes, and I was what I call a crazy maker. Yes, because I did that.
Catherine, what would you most like the coaches and the public who are listening today to take away from this call from you?
Well, what you modeled so beautifully for us in the very first question about walking your talk. You have to walk your talk if you want to do this powerful work with leaders. You have to be a role model. So I go on those 2-week vacations and I don't check email, and I don't I'm not in communication with my clients. I say to them, I don't want you to go on vacation and be in communication with your office, so I have to be a role model. And they're always joking about you're just back from vacation, or you're just getting ready to go on vacation. I say, yeah, it's in my job description. I got to go on these fabulous vacations because I have to be a role model for you. You're not taking enough vacations.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. I noticed that we have a couple people on hold.
Oh, great. So is it time for a question?
I think so. Anna, could you invite those people in?
Yes, I can. I will invite, there is one person that I know that wants to make a question. Her name is Dee, and I'm going to unmute you now.
Thank you.
Okay. Hello, Dee.
Hello. Hi.
Okay, you can make
this is a great
now.
Program. I have a question. When you start to work with your new clients, the CEOs, how long do you plan for the sessions to be? Is it something like you're going to, you schedule to do a 3 months, whether it's once or twice a week, and then they decide to renew, or is it a one-by-one event?
Great question, Dee. I try to get people, a new client, to commit to a 90-day coaching program. I tell them I'll invoice them monthly, and so it's not like a contract that they have to do it, but I want them to have the mindset that they're going to make a commitment to 90 days because I find that they get energy and enthusiasm and solutions in the very first complimentary call, but I don't want to overpromise. So I say it could take you 90 days to see the real value of the coaching. And then I try to get on their calendar 3 times a month. I say between their travel and my travel, we're never going to be able to do 4 times a month. And I find 3 times a month gives us enough consistency, especially in that first 90 days. They usually have a lot of cleanup work to do. You know, they've been putting up with Bob or Joe or Mary Sue, and so we have to, you know, have some fairly intense conversations about those situations. So I invoice them monthly. I try to save, if it's a CEO, I save 90 minutes on my calendar because I often will be late, and I want to have a good 45 minutes to an hour, and then with the senior VP and below, I save an hour, and I try to get a good 45 minutes. Sometimes it's only 20 minutes because of their calendar, but I always make the clients pay in advance. I invoice on the 15th of September. We sent out our invoices for October, and they're due on October 1, and the reason for that is when you're coaching at the CEO level and the senior executive level, their calendars are terrible. And so you might go a whole month without talking to your client, but it wasn't because you weren't on their calendar. And if you aren't getting paid in advance, then you're giving them permission at the end of the month to say, well, we never talk, so I'm not going to send this check. And then you'll be taking bankruptcy because you're not going to have any revenue. So I always try to get paid in advance. I'm pretty much due. And sometimes we run the credit card. Sometimes we, build great connections with the people that get the bills paid to make sure we get paid pretty close to the first of the month. Is that helpful?
Great. Thank you. I had one other question based on what you said. Oh, I know. Do you meet with them in person? Are you traveling all the time, or do you do an initial meeting in person and then the rest by phone?
Well, it's funny that you say that. I do 95% of my work by phone. I had a speaking engagement the other day, and one of the people came up to me afterwards, and she was oh so happy to see me, and she shared in the group when we opened up for coaching, and she made reference to what I had taught her. I had no recollection of her at all, and I was horrified, and I asked the person who invited me to speak, I said, who is this person? I know I haven't met them through you. And he said, well, she's this person, and this person is where she works. And you coached her years ago, and she still talks about it all the time. And I said, oh, my God, I did a little short-term coaching, and I might have met her once, maybe at the end to graduate, or in the beginning we did the complimentary session face-to-face. So sometimes I've coached people, and I won't meet them for a year or two. When I'm working with the CEOs, I started this with the senior executives. I do what I call a jumpstart program, and I try to sell them a jumpstart program at the very beginning of the coaching program, and that's where I spend a day or a day and a half with them in my conference center here in Phoenix, where I get them trained and acclimated to all my methodology and all my tools, and we really kind of outline the coaching agenda. I'm not always able to sell that, and so I might not meet them right away face to face. So I have one client in Boston that I've been working with almost 2 years, and I've never met him.
I do too, for that matter. I think that's funny.
Uh-huh.
I have a client in Boston I've had for over a year, and I've never met him.
Right, it's a long way to get
and he's
to
in
Boston.
Boston.
Right. Isn't that funny? So, yeah. So, thanks. Is that helpful?
Yes, very helpful. Thank you.
Thanks. Thanks for calling in, Dee.
Thanks, Dee. Do we have another caller, too, Anna, or not?
There is another caller, but I try to, let's see if, I'm going to unmute caller that the phone number starts in 928-474.
Okay.
Okay, I'm waiting for the system to unmute him. Hello? You are on the air.
Hello? Caller, are you with us?
So I think it's somebody that is in listening only mode, so we can proceed with the interview, and if there is more people calling in,
sure.
I will tell.
Okay, good. Thanks.
Catherine, would you share a little bit with us about your the importance in your life of organizations like the International Coaching Federation and other professional support organizations that you're part of?
Yes, and I wanted to clarify what you said in my introduction, because I am a co-founder of one of the versions of the International Coach Federation in Arizona, but not the current version. In 1996, Thomas Leonard wanted to help start a professional association, and he reached out to me and a guy in Tucson named Jeff Rames. And we kind of organized very loosely a group, and we met in Casa Grande, and then we met periodically. And that lasted for, you know, a couple of years, and then it fell apart. And then there were about 15 iterations between then and now. But about 5 years ago, Linda Miller and Alan Milham and Pete Walsh came together, and they said, it's a disgrace that we don't have a high-functioning chapter of the International Coach Federation in the fifth largest city in the country. And so they got this group started and then recruited people like Anna and Tamara and Deb Exner and Karen Ramsey and just an extraordinary lineup of people, Laura Atwood, that have all served in leadership roles. But I can't take any credit for that version. But what I do know is that no one is an island. We cannot function successfully all by ourselves. Isolation breeds mental illness in my mind. When I think about my loved ones or my neighbors or my friends who isolate, they are not the ones that are the healthiest in my perspective. We need to be part of a church community, or we need to be part of a neighborhood community, or we need to be part of a professional community. We don't grow if we're in isolation and we're not in relationships. We don't grow all by ourselves. We only grow in relationships. So I think it's critical. I am leaving Sunday to go to the International Coach Federation Conference in Las Vegas. I've been to most of those conferences. I haven't been the last 2 or 3 years because of scheduling conflicts and family commitments, but I think it's very important to support our professional association because we want the profession to mean something, and then, too, because we're not going to grow if we're all just by ourselves in our home offices.
Yes, that's really true. Yes, So what... from your perspective, if you are on the call, we might have listeners. Excuse me, my cell phone's ringing, but it's obviously not you. So we might have listeners today that are calling in who are, again, just starting their coaching career or rebuilding their business. Given all of the wisdom you've shared thus far with us today, what would you say to someone who's just starting out should be the priorities for them in building their business?
Well, a key to my success, after I started, I already belonged to a civic organization before I was a coach. And so initially I started coaching clients, these micro-sized business owners that I got from the speaking, the professional speaking at, you know, the little venues like the small chambers of commerce and the small civic clubs. But then I started getting clients from my civic club. People that had known me for 4 or 5 years started bringing me into their companies. And that's really how I got into the healthcare and how I got into the bigger clients. So if I were starting today, I would join a Rotary Club or an Optimist Club or a Civitan Club. I would join some kind of professional community-based service organization. And I would get involved. I would serve on a committee, and I would go to the meetings and I would volunteer and I would build those relationships with people. And then I would reach out and try to go to lunch with them or go to breakfast or just come by their office to get to know them or meet them for coffee. And out of that, those connections, you could build a business. And that's for anybody, not just coaches. But people do business with people that they have a relationship with, and so you have to have a relationship, I think, first.
So for you, relationship building, networking are really key to building a business, particularly when you're new in the arena.
Yes, but even for me, when I said I was going to go into smaller companies, so I could penetrate at the CEO level, I within 18 months got. To this day, the biggest client I've ever had, somebody with 10,000 employees, and I got that from a networking opportunity, an invitation-only networking opportunity that I got through my Civic Club.
Mm-hmm.
And I had been in the Civic Club like 10 or 12 years by that time. And this CEO said to me, I'm a new CEO. I've been looking for an executive coach. My people have been looking for a coach for me. Why didn't they find you? And I said, I don't know, but here I am.
And
I went on to work with that company for 4 years.
Wow.
And I'm still very much connected with that CEO and in lots of good ways. We're like family. So, definitely the relationships have been key for me, building those relationships at the Civic Club level and then with the building great relationships with the clients.
Mm-hmm. Anna, do we have any more callers before we get to the end of our show?
Yes, we have Paula. I'm going to unmute you, Paula. You are on the air.
Hello, this is Paula, and hello to Tamara and Catherine. Wonderful.
Hi.
I'll hear you both.
Thank you. Thank you.
And Catherine, I just wanted to say how much I appreciate your participation in the local Phoenix chapter. You were one of the first people I met when I came to a chapter meeting right at the beginning when I was thinking about becoming a coach, and you really, big nugget that you gave me right at the beginning was to go for that, as you were just mentioning to Dee, go for that 3-month commitment and get paid up front. And that's how I've structured my business, and it's working well. So thank you.
Oh, yes, of course. Of course, we have to be role models.
Yeah.
We have to value ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love how you you've shared today. I was taking some good notes because every time I hear you, I pick up something out. So
I'm so happy.
Yeah, you just got such good wisdom to share, so I really appreciate it. I love, that you can see from a client that is willing to do the work of putting in, realizing how important it is to have that exercise and those reserves of time and to make it happen and realize that it's going to have an incredible impact on their life, and you model it. So it's just, I think it's very powerful what you're sharing today in modeling that behavior and how things will align when you are modeling that behavior.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you for saying that. It's always great to be connected with you.
Yeah, thank you. And I'll be at the conference this weekend. So.
Great. Oh, great. I'll look forward to
seeing you there.
Yes.
Paula, while we have great. Did you have a specific question for Catherine, too?
My biggest struggle, Catherine, and I appreciate so much what you're saying about getting involved with the civic organization, and I definitely think I could do more of that. But I tell you, one of my biggest challenges is just marketing, and for yourself, how have you done more of that marketing in recent years, or do you mainly just go on referrals? How do you manage to do your marketing?
Well, I've done a million different things because I'm a very creative person, but the only thing that's been successful for me is getting clients through referrals. I got that big client through the networking, But that was, you know, invitation only. So it was a referral just because I was in the room. They didn't invite everybody. So my other clients have all come pretty much from referrals from other satisfied clients. And what I have to do is I have to train those clients. I say at the end of the call, what are the takeaways from today's call to help them cement the learnings and make sure they captured everything. And then if they say, you know, I've gotten so much value and I was telling my brother-in-law, Bob, about this, so you might, you know, might expect a call from Bob. I don't trust the universe on that one. I say, well, you know, it's probably not going to get to the top of Bob's to-do list to call me. So next time you're with Bob, why don't you just get permission for me to call him? And then I hang up the phone immediately as soon as the call's over, and I call the client's administrative assistant, and I say, I tell them exactly what happened, and I say, I'm going to need at some point to get Bob's contact information from you and Bob's administrative assistant's contact information. So, you know, you don't have to give that to me today, but let's both be looking for an opportunity to do that. So I use those administrative assistants and executive assistants aggressively. We bond with those people. They are our success is 150% dependent on our connection with them. They're the ones that are going to give us the contact information. They're the ones that are going to push through, make sure the invoice got approved and got to the accounts payable department. They're the ones that know who the people are in accounts payable that they can trust to get our checks to us. So they know, you know, they're the ones that are going to call us and say, look, it's not looking good today. I think at your 2 o'clock it's not going to happen. And you know, it's so important to bond with those folks.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. Thank you for sharing that. That's very helpful.
Good. And thanks for calling in, Paula. It's always great to be with
you. Oh, you're welcome. Love the show. Thank you.
Thanks.
You know, you said something that maybe you can comment on very briefly before we end the show, Catherine, about we actually do, so to speak, train our clients, too. Can you say a little bit more about that?
Yes. You train them to give you referrals. You train them to do the work. You train them. I mean, we're training everybody about how to relate to us and treat us. I went in, my very first coach, a woman named Susan Corbett Klein, shared the example of a woman that she had worked with or known, and the woman had like 3 husbands over her lifetime, and they all of them were fabulous. They all, you know, were devoted to her, and they were, you know, financially, you know, affluent, and they adored her, and they were just so good to her. And so somebody asked her, well, how is it that you've had all these great husbands when so many, you know, so many marriages end in divorce and so many couples don't have good connections? And she said, well, I never expected that I wouldn't have fabulous husbands. So we got to expect that we're going to have fabulous clients, and we got to, you know, train them. And I'm from Mississippi. I have a very soft style, so I'm never going to get in anybody's face. But I look for subtle ways to put boundaries in place if I feel like they're, you know, abusing me or not being respectful of my time or whatever. So, you know, people only change when there are consequences. So I always look for those little small soft ways to put in consequences. And then I just say, you know, I need to get on your calendar to have a conversation about the logistics of the coaching on occasion if something's not going well. So I won't bring it up in the coaching call, but I'll say, you know, I wanted to just talk to you about what happened last Tuesday. I was wondering what you thought about that and blah, blah, blah. So the key is to stay in the conversation, not step over anything at all. If something is going to go south, we're going to get messages from the universe 6 years before that and 6 months before that and 6 weeks before that and 6 days before that and 6 hours before that. There are going to be plenty of messages that something's going to go south. So through the self-care and the self-management, I find that you're able to kind of pick up on those and yeah, pursue them, and then things don't go south.
Mm-hmm. This is great, Catherine. Thank you so much. And is there one time for one more call on it?
No, I think we only have less than a minute now.
All right. Well, this has been a fabulous conversation with Catherine Halpin, sponsored by the Phoenix chapter of the International Coaching Federation. We invite you to listen in again and listen to this as a taped interview and also share it with your friends. Thank you and goodbye. It's been a pleasure to be with you. This is Tamara Stark with Leadership Mastery and Transformative Leadership Solutions. Have a fabulous day.
Thanks, Tamara, and thanks, Anna.